When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Hollywood Pipeline Podcast. I am Dax Holt, joined by Mr. Adam Glenn.
What's up, buddy? Dude, I have been enjoying this conversation with Annalyn. Let's get back to it.
Yeah, so if, for people that are just joining us this week and they haven't listened to the last episode, stop right now. Go listen to the last episode because we started this as a part two of our interview with Annalyn McCord. And we're right in pretty much a pretty sensitive topic, but we've been talking about the sexual abuse that she has suffered through her childhood and then some of the issues that she had later on in life. But my last question to her, where we can pick back up, is did you ever confront the person after all of the stuff came out, the allegations came out, after your realization that things happened, did you ever confront that person?
I did on a couple occasions, just different things had come out. So different conversations were had. The person never acknowledged that it happened.
Denied or just didn't acknowledge?
Denied. And said, you know, I just wouldn't do something like this. And I'm like, well, you did, but okay. But for me, I think, you know, one of the profound things about acknowledging the person is really it's for you. You're talking to something that has been a monster inside of you for years. And now you're having a conversation with that monster. And you're saying, you know what, monster? I see you. Something about turning on the lights when there's a monster in your bed and he goes away. You're not a monster anymore. I'm safe. But that next level because the conversation is not normally like a nice one on the first time around. So there was the not nice one where I think veins were popping out of my neck a couple of times. I might've looked like the Hulk. But then the next level was, I want you to get help. Like, I want you to get help. I want you to be okay. And I don't want this to happen to anyone else. And I don't think you want this to happen to anyone else. And then it finally came to a sense of acceptance of I'm not in control of what happens in the rest of the world. I'm in control of what happens in this world right here, which is my world, which is me. And what happens in here is that no one is allowed to take space in here anymore unless I invite them inside of me, literally and figuratively. No one gets to be in here but me and who I allow in. And that means that the only part of this person who's allowed in is him as an 8-year-old boy who I have an incredible amount of love and compassion for. Because if that little 8-year-old boy, grew up innocent and didn't have anything bad happen to him, there is no way that he would then become someone who could be hurtful or a monster to another child. I just don't believe that. I don't believe that we do things unless things show us how to do those. Children mimic. We learn from what we see.
Did you ever think about going to the police now or then about it, you know? Or
yes, I did. I actually spoke to the FBI, multiple FBI agents, because of the nature of the things that happened and other factors that were involved. And the FBI had initially gotten involved, and then they realized that it was a local law enforcement situation, and that the local law enforcement, you know, told me what I already knew, which was the statute of limitations was over. And that is something that for a lot of people is extremely disheartening, because it's like you finally get to this place where you're ready to like stand up for yourself. And it's like, oh, sorry, you didn't remember early enough. So your pain doesn't count. The end. Like, it's kind of crazy. It's like, it's pretty hard on a lot of people, because it feels so invalidating. For me, this journey is number one about healing, number two about justice. So I was in a different boat, but yeah,
What about the attacker at 18? Did you ever confront that person or even see that person ever again after that night?
Yeah, I was 19. I think I was 18, 19. Yeah, around there. So I had completely, as I said, disassociated from that. And about 10 months later, one of our mutual friends, and I had fallen out of our friend group. So I had had a group of people that I'd kind of started to be in with when I first moved to LA. And I didn't do anything with the group anymore. And a couple of times everyone was like, just come out. Like, why won't you come out? Like, whatever, whatever. And I came out one time. I saw the person and I wore a black wig, but that was kind of normal for me because everybody knew that I wore wigs and I just do random stuff. Because as previously mentioned, Crazy Cat Lady started before she had a cat. She was just a crazy lady. So Crazy Lady was out with her wig, which is totally normal to my friends and to me until now. And I realize it's cuckoo, but so I saw this person and I was like trying to keep my head down and they were in the crowd, but they hadn't seen me. And then they made me and just like started to come after me, and I was like, I literally like a gazelle in the Serengeti, like I took off, I ran out, I crossed four lanes of traffic without even looking. It's a surprise I didn't get hit by a car. I was screaming at the valet, the lovely valet in LA that we have so much of, which this time I was happy and I didn't park my car in the street. I was screaming, get me the red Mini Cooper. Meow, I have a meeting at 11 p.m. at night. Doesn't make any sense. Didn't matter. Didn't care. Get me the keys. And like literally he's like throws them at me. Doesn't know what to do. And I'm like, get in my car. And I just peel out. And then a couple months after that, a mutual friend in that group, because then I just stopped hanging out altogether. I was just not going to chance that experience happening. I was at my friend's house, Kirk, and he's like, he would basically be the equivalent of like a big brother. He's like, he would walk me to my car at night, but he also give me shit all the time. Just like this hoe over here, like, you know, like, and that's how our relationship was. We're just like, we're kind of bros, but he's like a big brother to me. He would do anything in the world for me. I was hanging at his house and then he comes up and he's like, I know why you don't hang with our group anymore. You're in love with this guy who had raped me. And my entire body started feeling all that same stuff that I obviously had felt when I ran out of that place when I had seen the guy. And he's like, oh, you do? Look at you. I'm like, no, I'm not. And he's like, you're in love with him. Yes, you're in love with him. I knew you're in love with him. So I guess the guy had started telling people that I was in love with him. That's why I wasn't hanging out. And I was just, this was almost like being raped all over again, because I'm like, this is being told about me behind my back. And like, it just felt so disgusting. And like, I just felt, and it was the energy of my friend Kirk, who's like, I see it. Look at you. Listen, you can't even admit to it. You're in love with him. And the more his energy got, the more it like caused me. And I just finally blurted it out. It was the first time I'd ever said it. And I was like, I'm not in love with him. He raped me. And the second I said the word, my entire body just like locked down. It was just like panicked. And so this whole thing led to me having to, my girlfriend was like, you never hang out with us anymore. It was my 25th birthday. Like, if you don't, you know, show up, you're not a good friend. And I was like, I either have to not be a good friend and not show up at her party, which, by the way, if someone tells you you're not a good friend because you didn't come to their party, then they might reconsider your friend group, but whatever, I was 19. But so I realized I either had to not come to this party and let her down, or I had to tell her the truth. And so she would go on to be the second person I told. And she like burst into tears, and Kirk had gotten so angry. Like, he's Irish and he turned 50 shades of red. Like, his entire face looked like it was going to pop off. And I was like, what is going on? And I felt nothing. And I'm like obviously for these 10 months. And I'm like, why should I have gotten angry, or should I have burst into tears? Like, I'm looking at these people, like these interesting little, these interesting little creatures. I'm like, well, should I have reacted differently? And so I go to the birthday party, and she's explained to the bouncer, like, you know, this is a person, they're not allowed in, la, la, la. The security guard literally takes a 5-minute break to go to the restroom. And this guy goes in with a group of people who are all on the list. And I come around the corner, and he like comes around the corner at the same time. And he's like, hey, and like, just like, literally, I just immediately like back into the corner, and he like puts his arms on either side of the corner, and I'm just like, I feel like a trapped animal. And I'm just like, and he's like, I'm like, he said, what we had was beautiful. What we had was beautiful. And I'm like, I couldn't say the word because it's really hard for a survivor to say the word. It was actually shocking that it shocked me that I said it to Kirk, but it was in that intense moment and I hadn't said the word since. But I couldn't say that actual word, but I kept saying, you know what happened. You know what happened. Like, you know, you, and he was just like, he just was like, just like, you, I don't know why you're saying this. What we had was beautiful. And I was just like, just my entire body was just in absolute panic. And my boyfriend at the time had walked around the corner and he was like super like one of the not jealous types. And I recommend being a jealous type in a situation like this, like, help. And he came back around. I think I kicked his shin so hard he probably like has a bruise to this day. I was like, help me. And he's like, I'm going to take my girlfriend away. And then I never saw him after that, but that was the only incident. And it was terrifying. It was like running in, it was like being in the room with a lion.
Wow. You were a young model, 15 years old when you started. Did you ever have any interactions as far as like people saying, hey, kind of being a little over sexual or, you know, or being taken advantage of as being a model or even with a casting director as an actress? Have you had any issues or
I'll do what Sharon Stone did. Yes, Adam. Of course.
The thing is, like, obviously the Me Too movement hit Hollywood and the movie industry. The Me Too movement really hasn't hit the modeling industry. And you hear the stories, you hear about predators in that industry using their power, using their fame or their job position to get these girls their start. Why haven't we heard anything from that yet?
Absolutely. And I mean, if you look at it and you think about why, you know, what's the risk now? So you have a world where it's no longer good enough to be, you know, I was one of the few lucky little midget models. I'm 5'7". But it's no longer good enough to be, you know, 5'10", 5'11", and beautiful or interesting. It's like you just have to have 50,000 followers and some cute bikini pics. And now you're up in the running in these modeling opportunities. That so you've got more options than you've ever had with the same probably amount of opportunities, and you're going to put your job on the line by saying that someone did something who could take your job away. It's scary. And that's why, you know, I have a lot of mixed feelings about the Me Too movement. I'm so thankful that we have this, you know, this platform now where survivors can come forward. We do live in a world where you're guilty once accused, and that's a dangerous world. It's a dangerous world. When you start seeing people with all of these allegations and they're coming out everywhere, it's kind of, you know, it would be silly to think that that's not true, but it is a difficult world to navigate. But with the modeling industry, I don't know a model who hasn't experienced that. I mean, one of the reasons that I didn't drink was I in the models department when I was 15 in Miami. This is when Ruflin had become a thing suddenly, once again, aging myself. Two of my friends were date raped. One of them was actually raped. Like, two were drugged. One was actually raped. And this was just something like you really hope doesn't happen, but it might. That was the way that people talked about it. It was not like this terrible thing. It was just like, you got to be careful. You might get raped.
But like, is this inside like the casting room, or is this like just at a bar?
I mean, they're very closely related. So what happens is that
you meet at a bar with someone that's getting you.
Well, it's like one of the big clients comes in town and they're shooting on location and they have a big table and they want to have everybody out. And, you know, so there's an element of like, you're out with people who could hire you tomorrow at the casting, and that's what's so tricky. It's not just and it's tricky enough when it is in the office, but it's not a 9-to-5 setting where you can, you know, you can go and, you know, go to a dive bar by you and not have to run into your boss or your potential boss, right?
Yeah.
In that world and in the world of Hollywood and all of entertainment and media, your part of working is the socializing element. So it's very, it's a very scary kind of concept. But yeah, I mean, I personally had an incident where I was supposed to wear like a, I was supposed to look like kind of businessy or whatever for the casting. And I went and I had a button down and, you know, you just like leave the top couple buttons down. And the guy reached over and was like, oh, your shirt's unbuttoned, and reached his entire hand in and grabbed my breast. Just like in my like shirt. Nothing. And like it was just totally, totally fine. And the, and you just kind of freeze. And then I had an incident with Terry Richardson, and I was an actress at this time, but I was doing Interview Magazine, and I even talk about this. Like my reps were like, you know, be careful, he can be kind of sleazy, and it was like normalized to warn the model that the person could be sleazy and to be careful. The same with Abercrombie and Fitch, and not for girls, for guys with that, but with Terry, I was pre-warned, and I remember because I was good at keeping people at arm's length. Like if they were like, I reacted, like I actually took off, I sprinted, I left the one where the guy grabbed my baby. I just like took off running. I left and ran all the way to the train. I was just like, I was very good with people that were outside of my circle, but because of what happened to me when I was younger, people inside my circle, I didn't think I had a right to say no, kind of thing. And so with Terry Richardson, I put off a very like masculine energy, like that was not, that as I learned from Tony Robbins, is not attractive to a masculine energy. I made myself very gross. I was like, what's up, man? Like, not the kind of chick you're trying to hang with. Like, I'm like, do you want me to move like this? Because he went to like touch me at one point, and I like recoiled, and I was like, I can put my arm up here like this. And it was like, yeah, she suddenly is not very sexy and very kind of like awkward and like maybe a dude inside. I was post-op. But it was definitely something that was throughout my career as a model. And so many models have told me this. And it's, you know, I don't know the full extent of why the stories are not out as much as they are, but that would be my assumption.
What is your advice to a new young actress who comes to Hollywood trying to make it? What's your advice to them to how to handle fame, overall fame, the, you know, being over creeping counters, acting? What do you generally say to someone? What's your advice to people?
Well, my first, when people tell me they want to be an actor, the first thing I tell them, my first piece of advice is do not do it. I'm like, if you still want to do it, that means you've got some gumption. So you're thinking about, you're like, screw this chick, I'm going to do it anyway. That's good. That means you've got some gravitas. Number two is imagine your entire life doing this your whole life and not making a dime. If you still want to do it, now we're talking. Now you've got something to work with, right? Because this is something real for you and something that goes deep. But also it has a sense of awareness that it's not easy and it takes a lot of work and it takes time. It's an overnight success, 10 years in the making, as they say. So if you've got those first two things down, then when you go into this, and this is something that I did not know in my life and the world, but in work, I know my value. And when I walk in the room, I know what I bring to the table. And when you do not treat me with the level of respect, whether it's what you offer me, like negotiations wise, contract wise, or the way you treat me in the room, if you don't treat me with respect, you will not have time with me. That is, I don't care who you are and I don't care what you can possibly do for my career. You don't get to be around me and you don't get to work with me if you don't respect me and what I believe my value is. So know your value would be the third one. Look at this industry and think everybody's going to tell me not to do it and I still want it. Check. I could never make a dime in my whole life doing this job and I still want to do it, check. know my fucking value, check. Those are the three top, those would be my top threes, I would say, because when you know those three things, you're so rooted and grounded in what you're here to do and why you're here to do it. And that's the other thing, is I had my what, I didn't always have my why. Right. So your why might change over time, but for me, I didn't even have one. My what was just like, I'm going to be an actress. And it started to fall apart when I got offered 90210 and I didn't want to be in this town anymore. And I was having what I called a young life crisis. And I said no to the show and they thought I wanted more money. And I was like, you can't entice me with money. I grew up in a trailer park and I ate ramen noodles in New York. I don't need your money. I don't want to be here anymore. And it was finding my why, which was, that was when I got involved. I got on a plane to Cambodia. I went and I met these girls who changed my life. And suddenly if I elevated me, I would elevate them. And that was my why. So knowing your what and finding your why and having those three values of what you're willing to put into this, what you're willing to do and not necessarily ever get, and what you're worth, and your what and your why. That would be my advice.
Is that what happened when you did 90210? Is that when you originally got it, you wanted, they offered you more money, you kind of turned it down for it. You know, what happened when you?
I've never heard this story. I didn't know that you didn't accept the role right away. That's really interesting.
Yeah. My agents wanted to murder me. They were like, this is your big break, you crazy person. and I was going through a moment where I come off of Nip Tuck, first of all. Like, as an artist, I come off of Nip Tuck working on an acclaimed show with an unbelievable writer creator, unbelievable actors. Everybody works, does their job to the best of their ability, and they go home and they have their families and their life. And there wasn't drama. I didn't understand when I would then go on to do a film for Sony called Fired Up, which I did in the period of time when Nip Tuck was on a hiatus due to the writer's strike. And I just was kind of thrown into a world with 20-something-year-olds who had a very different outlook on what it meant to go to set every day. And I just didn't necessarily, not there was anything wrong with it. I wasn't accustomed to it, wasn't used to it, and it wasn't my way. I liked what I experienced on Nip Tuck and in a way felt a little spoiled and was like, I want to be an artist or I don't want to do this kind of thing. And there was a film about human trafficking that got shelved at that same time that I was doing Fired Up. And I was just heartbroken that it got shelved because it was in the middle of rewrites and because it was a writer's strike, they couldn't do anything more with it. So it didn't get made. And so I was just like, oh, this is just not what I'm a thespian. I want to be a thespian. I want to be an artist, you know, and I was just so dramatic. So I just thought that maybe I just wasn't cut out to be in this town. It wasn't my thing. And I got in touch with my old acting partner who had educated me on the issue of human trafficking, actually back when I was 17, studying in New York. And I called her and I was like, well, I'm coming back to New York. I hate this town. I'm over it. I'm not going to be an actress anymore. I'm going to work at Starbucks and find a new passion because blah, this place sucks. And she was like,
oh no.
Oh.
All right, let's call her back. What happened?
Sorry, guys. I tried to hang up on the person and I ended up hanging up on you guys. No, so I got back in contact.
Oh, hold on. We can't see you.
Oh, where is it? Hold on.
There you are.
Okay, sorry about that. I was like, wait, that was the wrong button. So I got in contact with my old acting partner from New York who had educated me on the issue of human trafficking. And I told her, I'm coming back to New York. I'll work at Starbucks. I'll find a new passion. This is not it. This is just not it. And she was like, you are insane. Like, you don't understand what kind of platform you have to be able to help people. And it never occurred to me. I didn't know. I was 20. I was like, I'd always been as Tony Robbins would say, I was a power god. I was in my red, it's all about me. I'm cutthroat. I'm ruthless. I'm here to make my dreams happen and my life happen. And oh, no shit, Sherlock, I wasn't happy. But so she helped me kind of elevate up the scales of consciousness to a higher level by getting on a plane with me to Cambodia. I met these girls who I thought I was going to go and help save them, and they saved my life and turned my world upside down. And then my work has really changed, and it's been about choosing work that will elevate me to elevate the work that I do with fighting human trafficking, and also things that, you know, that I obviously want to do or find are interesting, but it's a lot more about something bigger than just this and just me.
So then what changed? You came back from that trip and you're like, okay, now I'll do the show?
Well, actually, it was in getting involved and getting educated that I started to really see, I think, you know, what I didn't realize at the time was this connection to these stories was so personal because of what happened to me, that I had this need to do it now. So I planned the trip. I didn't actually get to go until after filming. But I got, as soon as I started learning more about the stories and learning more about it, I was just like, this is what I'm doing. And I talked to my publicist and I was like, okay, look, if I take this show, I want to be able to talk about this issue. I want to be able to educate on this. I want to be able to, and he was like, yeah, there'll be your interviews. You can talk about whatever you want to talk about. And I'm like, well, okay. But like, I'm not going to do it otherwise. And he's like, okay, that's fine. And so that was really, I was very naive to the process at the time.
Gotcha.
That's insane. So your show, it was a success, 90210. It ran 5 seasons. I mean, it probably made you made very good money for that and kind of set you up for a lot of good things. The last season of 90210, the reboot, just only ran 1 season, didn't get picked up. You know, why did you think that one?
And that was like what, the biggest show of the summer. I kind of am confused why it didn't get picked up. I'm surprised. It was funny. It was something different. People still like those characters. So I don't know. What's your opinion on it?
I didn't actually see it. But
what? How did you not see that? You are a 90210 star. They reboot the show that you know, like,
I told you guys, I'm weird. I'm homeschooled. I have a weird taste.
Yeah, but I get it. If you were like, I didn't watch American Idol's reboot. I get it. You have nothing. But like, you became super famous because of that show, and then that show is back on. How did you not watch that? Just out of curiosity.
I actually never saw the original 90210. So I'm the worst 90210-er ever. Like, I'm terrible.
That's unbelievable.
I know. I mean, obviously our show, we're so thankful that they did so well for 10 years in the 90s because we had a show as a result of them. But our show was very different than wasn't, you know, it wasn't meant to be a kind of a remake so much as it was a, as you said, a reboot. And it was something that was new characters, new storylines, you know, all that stuff. So, but I know, like, everyone was like, what is wrong with you? How could you not? And I don't know. I just, I watched like Penny Dreadful and like Peaky Blinders, and like, these are the types of shows I'm into. So they're very, very different, which is probably why I didn't initially want to do 90210. I didn't really get it. It wasn't, I grew up homeschooled. I didn't get the whole high school element of like bratty teenagers or whatever. And it was very much a stretch for me. But as far as like why a show does or doesn't do well, it's audience. It's always the audience. They tell us what they want and they tell us what they don't want. And it's like, if they, you know, if they're just not vibing for whatever reason, or if something doesn't catch now because there's so much saturation, if something doesn't catch like right away, people don't even give it a chance. They don't want to sink any more money into it. There's so many more, you know, forms of content that they can. Yeah. So it's really hard. It's amazing that they got their first season and that it was doing so well as it was, because it's not easy to get anything, even remakes like and reboots, go off the ground these days. Yeah. I would say in the last 5 years.
Have you ever run into any of those cast members from the original?
Yeah, I have, mostly when I was on the show, because we would be paired, you know, at events or something like that. I haven't run into them any and in recent years, just, but my kind of circles have changed a little bit just because I'm over in Marina Del Rey, you know.
Which is this, you know, you're in LA, who is the celebrity that you run into the most? Like, oh my God, I keep running into this person.
Like back in the day?
in general, back in the day, in general, is there one person, like, who's the biggest star that you always run into? Maybe in your hood, or maybe just, like, is there one person
you
always...
Or you're just, like, outside of Oprah's house, you're like, I can't keep, like,
yeah,
keep running
Oprah
into her.
Yeah, Oprah and I just run into each other all the time. actually, Paris Hilton, like, I would see her all the time, and I mean, like... I personally, her, it's The Simple Life is the only reality show that matters in all of time. It is, like, I bow down and worship at the foot of.
But I would also say, wasn't that, like, her heyday of, like, super fame was also at the time that, like, 90210 was just massive, right? So I'm assuming you guys were going to the same clubs or the same hangouts, same events, and she was the... it person to send to anything at that time.
Yeah. We literally saw each other. I mean, it was exactly that. And it was like, she had hit and then we were coming up. But it's funny, I hadn't seen her in a while. And then I was at the Elton John Oscars party in February, and she ended up being, we were sat at the same table. And I mean, she's so much fun. And it was funny because we realized, like, out of all the years that have run into each other, just like, hi, all the whole time for a decade, this was the first time we actually had a real conversation about anything at all, because you look like you're, you know, in this group of people, but you're really not. You're just, you know, if you're photographed together or at the same event, then it's kind of perceived that you know people, but you don't really know them. So, but I think she's awesome.
So
she's
I was going to say, a lot of people ask me, they say, like, who is one celebrity that you've met that you are, like, so surprised? And my answer is always Paris Hilton, because you have this perception of Paris Hilton, but then the real Paris Hilton is... so nice, so kind, smart.
Yeah.
She clearly
funny.
Has...
she's so funny.
She's funny. She's savvy.
Yeah.
So who have you met that has also broken that expectation for you?
Well, the Kardashians came on my show on 90210, like season 2 or 3. And they were just kind of launching. I actually gave them an award for breakout... like breakout
reality
stars or breakout shows or something. I mean, it must have been 10 years ago or more. Maybe 10 years ago. But everybody, you know, they're on set. Everyone's like, wait, what's this going to be? Is it going to be dramatic? Is it, first of all, they were not even on time. They were early. They were hair and makeup ready. They were so willing to be looked at and touched up by the other art, because, you know, their makeup, like, you have to have, like, union, whatever credentials to be on set. Kim was the sweetest thing I've ever met in my life. Chloe was hilarious. Courtney wasn't there. It was just Kim and Chloe. But Kim was so sweet that literally she was supposed to be mean to my character. She was supposed to be mad at my character because my character, like, stole from her or something. And she was just like, Naomi, it really wasn't cool that you stole from us. And I was like, oh my God, I don't want to be mean to her. She's so nice. She was so nice. I mean, I was blown away. I didn't obviously know here nor there, but everybody was like, you know, everybody's like, catty as shit.
That was a pretty good Kim voice, though, I gotta say.
Yeah, that was great.
Oh, she was so sweet. And I thought Chloe was hysterical. She obviously is hysterical, but, like, it was totally, we all were talking after, just like, wow, they're so awesome. I, you know, people say all this stuff, and then you meet someone, and they're just awesome. So they were super cool.
Do you, let me ask you this, Anna. Are you, since you're so knowledgeable of, like, your own values now, you know, you've done a lot of personal work, personal development work on yourself, through therapy, through doing a lot of different treatments. Are you a good girlfriend? And I only say that because, like, it's, you know, some people might be kind of scared of that. Like, oh my God, here's this girl who's so strong about what she wants. I might be taken back about that. But does that make you a better girlfriend now? Because you're
The truth is, Adam, I pretend to be really good, but I'm a terrible person. And I just want to get you into my little web so I can ruin your life. it's so interesting. I had a huge breakthrough. So obviously Adam gave me the hookup, like, really made things awesome for me while I did Date with Destiny, which is my first Tony Robbins event. And I'll say it was extremely full circle to be able to have started my life listening to cassette tapes that my sister grabbed from our grandmother's house and we listened to when we were kids, to then restart my life with my memories coming back and really know myself for the very first time, then to follow that healing process up with going to Date with Destiny and actually getting to meet Tony. Thanks, Adam. But at the event, one of the biggest breakthroughs I had was relationship, was to do with relationships. And I realized that, because he has you make these little bubbles. So you're like, you're working on yourself bubble, and you're working on work bubble, and then you're working on relationships, little tiny bubble that's so small. That was my experience. So what I realized is I've kept people at arm's length. Intimacy was so scary for me. Obviously, sex, no problem. Like I could fake it. I could fake intimacy all day long. Because typically, I mean, it's not always the truth, but a lot of times when it comes to guys, like if your guys are having sex and it's great, the guy thinks the relationship's great. So I was good. He was good. And I didn't ever have to open up too much. And then there would always be that rocky point when he would start to kind of figure out, well, there's something like a little off, like we're not, something's going on. And then I would withdraw, because that would be me sensing that someone was trying to get to know me on a place that wasn't safe. And I would err on the side of putting on my masculine energy, or I would, like, you know, there was always something that I could do that would push you away enough that you would stop asking and stop trying to dig into who I really am. And what happened for me at Date with Destiny was that I was able to look at that part of my story and have a lot of compassion for how hard it's been for me to be able to be vulnerable and to open up and to be, you know, in an intimate kind of setting and maintain that. And to also have a lot of gratitude to the people that I've been with who have given me love. And even when I haven't let them all the way in and let them fully get to, you know, as Tony said, how can you be such an asshole and not let me give to you? Like, it's the gift that the giver has as well. I was much comfortable being on the, let me like give to you and don't ever see what I need or see that, you know, that I need you. Showing a need was really unsafe, or showing a want. It all felt like, you know, what if I don't get it? It'll be the worst thing in the whole world and I'll die immediately. And it's like, oh, okay, that's not going to happen. I'll say that my partners have always, you know, we're all friends and there's always an element of maybe, you know, there was nothing ever super horrible that I did to anybody. But in the early days when there were a lot of kind of reactive things in my 20s and stuff, I was a total raging bitch. I've called those former partners and apologized and kind of made up for that. But I would say that I'm someone who I'm not afraid of being vulnerable and being open and being in a connected dynamic. I'm definitely not someone who is like a all day, every day kind of chick.
Sure.
Like, I definitely need my autonomy. So that can be perceived in different ways. But I think that I'd be a fucking awesome girlfriend is the answer to that.
That's good.
What would you be doing if you weren't an actress today?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I would just move to Cambodia and I'd have a million children.
But let's take out money and success. What if you didn't go down the path of acting or modeling? Where do you think you'd be?
I would definitely be, I would own a university. I would be educating educators, because I think that they're all terrible. No, I think that the system is majorly flawed. And I would be someone who would create a space where I teach the people who are going to teach our future how to be and who to be in such a capacity that my students, the educators, would be so well-rounded as human beings that when they walk into that space with those kids, there's no power plays. There's no, you know, it's all coming from a place of wholeness. And I think that sometimes a big issue with when we're going from a sense of a helper, a giver, or whatever, which is oftentimes people who end up being teachers, that you come from a sense of like wanting appreciation. You can't want appreciation with children. You have to be unconditional. You have to be there because it makes you feel better that you're investing in the future of this planet. And that's how I feel about kids. And I would create a university and a well-rounded educational platform so that educators and anyone who went there to train would leave knowing that they have the tools to make sure that they are fully gratified just by the work itself without having to be validated by the kids and therefore not feeling hurt at the end of the day if some kid didn't like them or something.
Okay. That's amazing. Well, listen, you've been so good. Tell me, lastly, I want to hear about the Love Storm. You know, tell me about Love Storm, why it's important to you, and where people could find more information about it.
Okay, absolutely. So the Love Storm is the reason that I'm on this planet. This is why I came here, and it's why I had to have the crazy life that I have, because I had to build up these two parts of me, which are both made of love and full of storm. I'm an intense person. But so the Love Storm is a global awareness campaign educating on the issue of human trafficking. And I'll send you guys over the excerpts of what we're doing and what it's about and everything. But there's a quote that Albert Einstein said, which is, we cannot solve the problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. And I believe that we cannot solve the issues in our world with the same energy used to create them, right? So we want to fight violence, and then we have violent protests, or we have like this violent energy. We're angry and mad about things that are happening in the world because they're so bad. And it's like, that's still violence. So you're just fighting violence with violence. One's righteous indignation, violent energy. One's actual violence perpetrated onto our world. So for me, I believe that we have to take the kind of intensity that you want, that mad, that angry, mad feeling. You can have that level of intensity, but you can do it with love. And that love is, in my opinion, mama bear energy. So mama bear energy is, guys have it too. If you see a kid about to run out in front of a car and you're close enough to grab it, what are we all going to reactively do without even thinking about it? Our entire body is going to go flush with adrenaline and cortisol. We're going to go into survival instinct mode, and we're going to grab that kid and save its life with all the intensity inside of us, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a beautiful energy. It's from love, but it's also, it's powerful, right? So the Love Storm, that's what the Love Storm is supposed to be about. It's an educational event about the issues of human trafficking that we're hoping will be empowering, because we believe you cannot clean up the outside until you've cleaned up the inside. We're fighting slavery from the inside out. So the actual event is a mass meditation prayer. We're inviting, if you're Christian, if you're a Muslim, if you're weird, this is a joint thing. If you believe in loving kindness and compassion for this world and that fits into your religion or your belief system, we ask you to come out and express that with us in the form of whatever you we're calling it meditation. You can call it prayer, you can call it whatever makes sense to you, but spend 90 minutes with us on one day in 20 plus cities around the world to clean up the inside with that stillness that we need to clear the mind of its thoughts. And that's the only time that we can, in the belief of what we're teaching, is that you'll never kill slavery. You'll never kill human trafficking. Those are ideas, right? You can kill traffickers. You can kill people who are enslaving people, but you won't kill slavery and trafficking because those are ideas. The only way to overcome those ideas is to have a bigger and better idea. And that idea is freedom. And that freedom has to come from within, without, right? So we set ourselves free. We start breaking the chains on the inside. We can break them on the outside. So the Love Storm is an educational empowering event that hosts a mass meditation for all of us to come together, learn about the issues on a global level as well as a local level, so local organizations will be involved, have some seconds to clear our minds. We'll have we're having kids, like a 12-year-old is leading the first meditation at the Los Angeles, at the LA Storm, which is January 11th, 2020, National Human Trafficking Awareness Day. And when we were kids, it's like that visual experience. So like, if you're a child, you know, when we look up there and see a little girl, a little boy leading us in a meditation, we get to have a personal connection from our inner child to that little child. We instantly engage with the child inside of us, and we remember the moments when we were free, right? So this is a visual of what it used to feel like to be free. And so the idea is, if you walk away from our event and the only thing you ever do is set yourself free, you have already begun the process of clearing the collective consciousness from one more thought about slavery, and you've introduced one more idea of freedom. So you go to this event, you get educated, you get inspired, you get empowered, you start clearing the chains of yourself, you start clearing the chains in your household, and hopefully you'll come on board and fight human trafficking with me. But so the Love Storm will be in Los Angeles, in New York, in Toronto, Miami, Atlanta. We're going to London, Geneva, Sydney, South Africa, Cape Town. We end up on October 10th in Cambodia with my girls, which will be really amazing. So it's like a 10-month-long campaign. And you might see us randomly in Love Stormtrooper outfits. So I've gotten all my friends to do Stormtrooper flash mobs of me, which are terrible because I've choreographed the song and dance. And you just know, if you know me, you know the song and dance are going to be terrible because I did it. So if anyone wants to donate their time with dancing and singing, that would be better because I suck at that. But we're just trying to bring love and intense love into this world to make a really, really huge impact, to obviously fight this issue that is a global issue. It's in every country of the world. And it is something that I out of all the things that I can think of, selling a human being is probably one of the worst things I can contemplate. So that's what the Love Storm is here to help eradicate. So
listen, you're doing some amazing things. You're an amazing actress, but also you're doing some amazing things, personal work, as far as raising awareness for this stuff, but also just coming on this podcast and educating Dax and I and also the audience about stuff that you went through. So people, make sure you follow her on Instagram. She's a fun follow. She's a great account to follow on Instagram and social media. Check her out. Anna, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys are awesome. Thank you.
Appreciate your time. This is going to be our first two-part podcast, by the way.
I know. I talked a long time. So I told you you have to shut me up.
It was so fascinating. Normally, we would just be like, oh, we'll cut them down into our 40 minutes. But it's been so interesting, and you've had such good information that we're like sitting here going, no, this is going to be a two-parter. It's that good. So you'll be our first two-part episode. So thank you so much for joining us. It's been really fun talking to you. And I mean, very heavy at the same time, but with an issue, I think that, you know, there's someone out there that's going to be listening that goes, yeah, I'm dealing with crap in my life that should be out. And maybe I'm holding it in, and maybe I need to let it out and tell people. And hopefully that you give them that courage to do so.
Absolutely. And then they can always, I've had thousands of people reach out to me. I respond to everyone. It takes me a while, but I get back to everyone. You can actually go to thelovestorm.com. I manage that email account with my team. So anything that's personal to me, they'll shift right over to me, and I'll try to get back to any and everybody who may or may not have someone to talk to. You can talk to me.
Well, thank you again for all you do.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Wow, dude. That was crazy.
Crazy, dude. It's cool because, you know, like we said in the beginning, we've been following her for a long time, and then we get to talk to her in this long format and get to know about her and her struggles and her – but she's also in a really good place, so that's a great thing.
The thing is, not everyone can be that open about a past that is so – kind of like difficult to like talk about. And she sat there and she just talked to us for like an hour and a half, you know, like about everything. The woman doesn't hide anything.
Everything. It's, listen, props to her. She's so cool, so awesome, so honest. And she's doing some really great work. So it's just, that was a lot of fun.
Doing some great stuff. So, Big thanks again to Annalyn McCord for coming on the podcast today. You can find Adam at Adam Glenn on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok and MySpace and anything else. You can find me at Dax Holt, not on TikTok. All right, guys. Well, have a good one. We will see you next week. We got some good other guests lined up. They're coming up. I feel like this podcast is really, like, getting some legs, dude.
Dude, we were just the situation, I'm excited. 2020, a lot of good guests about to come on this podcast. I'm excited.
Woo! By the way, how cool is it seeing our story on the front page of TMZ? Yes!
Show business.
All right, guys, have a good one. Talk to you later.